This is Making Conversation, the Australian Composers Podcast.
This is the music of film and concert hall composer Joseph Twist. Colourful, nuanced, beautiful, enigmatic, full of life, serious, and playful. On first meeting, it's hard not to link these attributes to Joe's personality. I had the pleasure of recording this conversation in July 2016, at the end of a trip to the United States, where Joe is now based. We chatted, or gasbagged, as Joe likes to call it, for over 2 hours, and in this episode, you'll hear some of my favourite parts of our conversation, surrounding the many interesting facets of Joe's work and career in Australia and overseas.
Let's do it. So if I sit here, make sure I don't run over your toes there.
I think we should be good. Knees.
Yeah, if you want, like, yeah.
Do you want to,
I'll do one of that and like have a click track and just be like,
Oh, it is a click track.
Well, actually, it's on. Oh, no, it's
still on.
Let me turn it off. Now it's gone. It's not recording.
Into the beat.
That's it. Beautiful. Who wouldn't do that?
Oh.
Really? You know? It is exciting, though. Be excited.
I'm excited to be here with you.
Yeah. Hey, how was your trip? I'm just going to sit here and gas bag. I just realised, yeah,
it's had really, a good trip. Hi,
I'm Lisa Cheney. I am a director of Making Waves and I'm sitting in the Los Angeles bedroom of Australian composer Joseph Twist. Hi, Joe. Thank you for chatting with me.
Howdy. Hi, Lisa.
Could you tell us where we're sitting? What does it look like in your bedroom / workroom?
Oh, humble. I've got 3 computers, obviously, and there's all these slaves and things running all my fancy sounds into my machine, but they're propped up by portable tables that you would usually see at a Little League game with orange juice on them. So, you know, I'm, it's not glamorous, but it does the trick, and I'm working and, you know, living in LA, and that's good.
So why do you need so many computers?
Oh, basically because to do all these orchestral mock-ups in particular and, you know, film scores that require lots of synthesized sounds, sample libraries and things like that, you have to have a lot of RAM and you have to have a lot of computer power. That's basically the reason. Yeah, you need all these sounds to do that kind of stuff. So, film music is an audio beast. You know, it's a recording medium, so you have to have all these fancy sounds. But boy, do I love getting away from it sometimes and just writing a score.
Let's back up a little bit and talk a little bit about you and some of the amazing things you're doing. And for me, what I find most interesting is you seem to be straddling these two worlds of music making and the classical concert hall, contemporary music, and film music, which seems like an amazing feat. How did you get here? And let's go back a little bit further. How old were you when you started composing?
Oh, 4 or 5?
Really?
You know, that's really going back. I mean, but it's good. It's a good idea to go back there. You'll know why. You start playing on the piano, someone starts teaching you, but you don't play what's written. You know, what if Mozart did this, you know, what if I try this chord, you know, and then, you just start messing around. I remember one time I was improvising something years later. It wasn't jazz, we do all the jazz as well. And Noel Ansell, who's a choral conductor, said, oh, don't give up your day job. But I was just stuffing around and being an idiot. But anyway, it just reminds me of like how I used to just spend hours like bashing or like playing really lightly, you know. Just making up crap, but you know, when I really started studying music properly, then it became more coherent, I suppose.
So was more and more. Was your pathway into music via piano?
Well, I mean, physically or instrumentally, yes, because Mum bought a piano home. She wanted to learn, but then never did. And then my brother started having lessons, and he learned in the Suzuki method actually, which and then I started learning because he was learning these pieces and listening to them over and over. But I was doing the same thing without even having lessons, and just sort of picked a few bits out. And Mum thought, oh, he's obviously got an ear. So he took me over to piano lessons, and then I kind of took over in a way. But you know, it's good to go back to my childhood, because that's really where, for me, it begins. It's, I mean, you know, you grew up on the Gold Coast, right?
I did.
Yeah, we both did. I thought that was true. And you know, I'm just a kid from the Gold Coast, and I would have first heard an orchestra, for example, in all those John Williams soundtracks, Alan Silvestri, Jerry Goldsmith, you know, all those 80s movies, you know, late 70s, 80s movies that we all come to know and love. Star Wars, of course, Indiana Jones, Superman. I was such a Superman nut when I was, you know, 10 years old. Gosh. So, I mean, I remember, you know, walking around singing those themes. I used to think of the form of them, and I used to think, even just sitting, walking around, singing them, going, well, what if you went from this bit of the theme to that bit of the theme, and that would fascinate me. And I picked them out on the piano, and I'd even pick out little harmonies and things like that. That got more advanced as I got to know more harmonies and what have you. But the other thing I used to do is I used to get two cassette tapes. Well, first I used to get a dictaphone and listen to the credits and like record the music in the credits, which was, you know, the suite or some of the film music. And then I would use them as a temp track, which is something you do now. So I'd get like, say, the music from Star Wars or from Star Wars scenes, and I would re-edit it to match a scene in Superman 4 or some terrible movie like that, you know, just for fun. So matching music to picture was definitely something that interested me for a long time. I thought it was fascinating and still fascinates me, obviously. But even when I was a kid, that was, you know, a big thing. You know, the excitement of it, the grandeur, the colour of the orchestra, but told not just through the colours of the orchestra per se, but told through, you know, telling the stories of superheroes and swashbuckling characters.
Oh, to a night's wonder, a lifeless cosmos, unseen beacons announcing that here.
How did your music progress? Where did you go from playing the piano and making temp tracks?
Well, I mean, I did some singing at school. I had some piano teachers. I went to England for a few years and lived there. And I've at school, eventually, you know, that was all fascinating and fun, but eventually it all kind of, I'm sure you can relate, it kind of becomes, well, you know, you need to sit down and learn some actual music that people have written.
Mm.
I had to learn how to, because I played a lot by ear, and it took me a little longer to even really get to read music, which sounds crazy now because I write and arrange constantly. I work in notation a lot. Sounds funny to think that, but I remember when I was 12, I was still kind of struggling with it. But then I kind of, I don't know, something. I had a good teacher in England for a while, and then I had a good teacher when I returned to Australia, and she actually went to UQ, and she got me a little bit into jazz. I had a teacher for a little while who was also into jazz, but we moved away from her. But once I got to UQ, I think that's to me, that's when it really all started.
Disagree with them, you can glorify or vilify them, but the one thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things, they push the human race forward, and while some may see them as the crazy ones.
And so I was sort of mainly learning piano with Bevan Crabtree and then doing composition on the side, but when I got to my third and fourth year, I moved into composition and specialised. Yeah, so I'm glad I did the piano and stuff like that, but because I've still always played, but I don't play concert music really anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I miss that a bit, but I've got so much into jazz after that as well, so.
Here's to the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels.
The thing about concert music is that you kind of you know, talking about form and motive and stuff like that, you know, you think in these little cells and you invert them and you developing variation it or whatever, you know, you do all these different tricky things. Jazz musicians are ingenious in the way that they create that level of variety and yet unity at the same time on the spot. And there's different tricks and ways to do it, but it takes a lot of practice and a lot of listening. And I've been so busy writing things sometimes and you have to practice. You can't do everything. So it's absolutely why my jazz improvising is always like,
and
oh,
you
it's
do
okay.
so much.
I just, you know, it's terrible. It's, well, maybe it's good too, but I'm just insatiable. I'm so easily distracted. I just have to, oh, I want to try that. And I want to try that. And, you know, that's just, but that's why film music works for me too, because, you know, and arranging as well. You know, I have to write some little bossa nova piece 1 minute, and then the next minute it has to be like some sort of Gershwin-esque romantic scene, Eric Korngold kind of thing, Max Steiner, or then it has to be, I don't know, some sort of Baroque piece, and you have to fluidly move between those things, even the little thing I was showing you before, you know, and that's, I love that, you know, the connections between music is what I find fascinating, you know, and to go to that as well, I know I'm just rambling on here, but I may as well just say these things because I think about this stuff a lot. I think we all do. But I don't really consider myself an artist per se. I think of myself more as an artisan, which sounds... It's funny. I'm trying to sound unpretentious by saying, oh, I'm not an artist. And yet I almost feel like in saying that I sound pretentious.
No, please explain.
But yeah, so in describing myself as an artisan, I feel like for me, the craft is more fascinating. When I was a kid, I never set out to reinvent the wheel or write music that challenges people per se. That was never my intention. It was really more just to express, to entertain, and I don't shy away from that word. I'm happy to say that I write crass music, bad taste music, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's all subjective, sure. But there's a lot of craft in it as well, and I love the nitty-gritty and the craft of it, and I love discovering how a composer creates something and then synthesizing it in another way. And, you know, my music might, and particularly earlier, might from time to time sound derivative, particularly, you know, I think it's becoming less and less so, depending on the context, but then I'll write a piece of film music and it, like, I have to sound derivative. Mm. So, I mean, like, you, like, literally that's your job, you know. So I don't have a problem with that, and I enjoy that, and I embrace that. So for me, then, first and foremost is technique and craft and that kind of thing, and then finding a way to express yourself within that. But with that said, that's what's great about switching from film music. Well, not film music can be crafty too. It depends on the context. Or it's always crafty. It can be artistic, I suppose, is what I'm looking for, or a little more, you know, individual, original in a way, I suppose. In the music's sake, you know, it's all kind of subjective, isn't it? But I love doing concert music too, and switching back and forth and then going, well, now I've got this blank canvas, you know, so what can I do? And let me do something a little more out of the box, you know. But it's still, for me, my style, and everyone would agree, I'm sure, if you know some of my music, people would agree it's contained. It's not really setting out to reinvent the wheel. And, I mean, this is a... Yeah, people have been ranting on about this in good and bad ways for a long time.
It is a point of contention, isn't it? And every composer has this discussion with themselves all the time. But yeah. I mean, I'd love to go back to where you talk about what is your music. Mm. Given that you have to be so malleable and ready to work across many styles and genres, mm-hmm. Which is part of the film and commercial industry, do you think that your music still retain something a little bit Joe Twist? Is there something that you'd say that makes the essence or the core of your music? Could you
totally
describe it?
I mean, well, I return to John Williams and film composers in order to describe that. And I know maybe that's, you know, that's focusing on the film side, but let's at least start there for now, because that is where my first inspiration was, and I discovered the classical canon from that. Because, well, John Williams wouldn't be as good as he was if he hadn't wasn't a brilliant composer in his own right, and wasn't someone who really understood the tradition as well. But I would say that you look at someone like John Williams, and yeah, okay, so the theme from The Phantom Menace, Jewel of Fate, it's one of the main things. It's very Carmina Burana. It's so Carmina Burana. Like you could temp the whole thing. Well, this section, well, you could temp the whole movie with or those sections with Kamina Burana. Or there's other parts that have Mars, of course, the planets. I mean, I think even George Lucas was thinking of using, a bit like Stanley Kubrick in 2001, was going to use source music, you know, and just have a little bit of Holst and Strauss and what have you. But he does it in his way, and you still can go, oh, that's John does that, and he does this, and that's him, and he doubles these. He has this kind of orchestration. He uses these little sort of flourishes, or these little idiosyncrasies, where, you know, whether you get into how detailed they are, these types of harmonies, these he chooses these scales and lines to use at different times. And the same is for me. Let's therefore go to, I mean, I haven't talked much vocal music, and a lot of my career is vocal music. You know, I do little things like I often start on a pitch and I expand outwards. That's probably a little bit inspired sometimes by Eric Whitaker, but I do it in my way. What else do I do? I tend to use modes a lot, sometimes harmonically, sometimes melodically altogether. Like sometimes I'm writing less harmonically and more just with interlocking modes and things like that. And I always seem to use Mixolydian in certain ways, and, you know, so they're just, I'm just describing little examples, arbitrarily, but nothing about that is original, but there's certainly things that are prevalent in my music and that you hear coming up, and you hear the way that I use them. And I think that's personality, you know? And so that's, I suppose, in a sense, rather than seeking to reinvent the wheel, then you kind of instead look for a voice. And that goes to film music too, really. When a composer can, in a film and in concert music, you know, not, let's say in concert music, you know, if you're writing something that sounds like the last, you know, Lachman, or, you know, the last John Adams piece, the last, you know, things that's out there, that's great, and you should totally do that. But I think we all search for finding that thing that makes us set away from that and be individual, you know. And it's the same in film music, which has different, you know, strictures and different boundaries. I mean, the story is paramount always. That's the key, telling the story. You're a storyteller. You're almost an actor sometimes.
Listening to you talk, it sounds like you firmly associate yourself as a film composer now. I feel like you're looking back on the classical folks still working way behind you. When we first met in Brisbane, mm-hmm. I think it was a Southern Cross Soloists concert, and we both had a work on that program. So that was my first encounter with you writing contemporary concert hall music. How much of that are you still doing?
Mostly that, really, to be honest. I think I keep talking about film because I'm in LA and I work on lots of things. But look, to work on the huge movies here, I mean, it's takes forever.
Well, we all want to know.
Yeah, well, exactly. To be the composer on them, that's like, yeah. I mean, there's people who are younger than me who are working on big movies, and they're great at networking, probably better than me at it. I mean, you know, who's comparing? But they've also, you know, been in the right place at the right time, whatever. So it's not impossible, you know. But usually it's like years and years of like being in the right place at the right time, meeting the right people, working for other composers. Many work as assistants and stuff like that. But at the same time, I mean, you asked about concert music, of course, I need to talk about that. While I've been here, I've been writing all sorts of pieces. I had wrote another piece for Southern Cross and Teddy Tahu Road last year. Yesterday, Trinity College just performed my piece, and they're performing my piece around Australia, Trinity College, Cambridge.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So, and I've been writing all sorts of concert
and
pieces.
And the Victorian Opera.
Yeah, I had an opera as well. I mean, that was a, yeah. I love doing opera. That's a great thing too, because it's like, it's to me, the film music things apply, but in different ways, different, you know, there's different practicalities to it, but you can still apply the same, you're still telling a story, you know. And I do a lot of orchestrating and arranging for pop groups that play with orchestras. I did a whole David Bowie concert. I've got that Wiggles album that I did. But yeah, I'm still writing commissions, absolutely. I feel like, I mean, it's interesting that you noticed that I talk that way. I suppose it's just that I kind of got into film music world, and that kind of is where I always started, but then I moved into concert music. And maybe it's also that with concert music, I'm kind of in a place, not where, I certainly wouldn't say where it's not easy at all. Every time you get that, you know, you have to force yourself to make that file, you know what I mean? You know, you're gonna like, oh, I'll at least make the file so I can start writing the music, you know? Anyway, and it's daunting. You look at those blank, empty bars and go, oh shit, what am I gonna write? You
know? I'm laughing because it's true.
It's so true, right?
So true.
But I'm at a place where I feel I don't worry about what I'm writing so much. Or I do worry about what I'm writing, but it doesn't... Once I'm on the roll, it takes care of itself. And I wouldn't say that I've like found my voice, and I wouldn't say that I'm just going to sit here on a fence. It would be dangerous. It would be, you know, artistic stagnation, mm-hmm. you know, to just sit there and go, this is it. Yeah, music for music's sake. The concept seems to be so important, I feel like. Maybe I worry about it too much. Maybe it's just a bit of a conversation I have in my head a bit too much. But actually, film music was liberating in that way, to be honest. When I started moving... when we had that Southern Cross soloist piece played together, I'd just moved to Sydney and I'd made the decision, that's it. I finished my PhD. I'm going to move into film music now properly, because I hadn't had many opportunities in Brisbane.
And did you go to study at AFTERS?
Yeah, I went to AFTERS, exactly. And then I got to meet, you know, they have some, that's a great way to get to know the Australian industry. I mean, they have, you know, people like Guy Gross, Martin Armiger, Christopher Gordon's there, I mentioned him before. Jessica Wells, who, you know, she does concert music too, you know, and I've worked with now since. I mean, she's associated and done a lot of teaching at AFTERS, at least she did when I was there. So, you know, it all connects in the end. You know, people are doing this and that. And I mean, look, a lot of film composers, they come from a pop background too, and so they kind of come from that a different angle, and they don't have that. And then some of them might go on to try and write a concert piece. You know, look at someone like Johnny Greenwood. You know, he's, you know, Radiohead, and then, you know, There Will Not Be Blood, and is that the movie? And then there's other film scores he's done, and he's also written concert pieces now. I think he had something played by the BBC Orchestra or something. I'm not sure. This is all just in the back of my mind. But, you know, people... That's the 21st century, if you ask me.
No axe is sharp enough to cut the soul of a sinner who keeps on trying.
It doesn't have to be like, you know, that, oh, you know, I started playing piano at the age of 4. I mean, I did. But, you know, oh, I started piano at 4 and I went through the Baroque period to the classical too. And then I made my way to the 20th century and of course I experimented with surrealism and then now I'm writing this. You know, it's like, that's not the 21st century. No one lives in that vacuum, you know. Even to be honest, in my opinion, musicologists describe that kind of linearity and it's bogus. It's nonsense. There are people who... composers, particularly in the 20th century when, you know, plurality happened and, you know, different voices all happening at the same time more than they were. Well, they were in the previous centuries too. They're just they were a little less diverse, you know, ostensibly diverse. So I think people just have to be honest about what their background is. And there's no, I think, I encourage people, I think, I know that... what's his name? That awesome composer in Australia, Graham Kerner. I had some lessons with him a few times. And I know that he really encourages, and in a lot of his lessons, he just brings pop music out and says, listen to this, what do you reckon, you know? How do you reckon this might inspire your concert music, you know? And that's, I just love how real that is, you know?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's like you know, what inspires you, you know? What are your favorite composers? And that's great. What are you listening to lately? And, you know, it can be anything from Lachman to John Williams to Stephen Sondheim to, I don't know, Berio, whatever. But then it's like, okay, well, what's the latest pop band you heard? You know, do you like the latest Chili Peppers song? You know, what have you been listening to? You know, stick it in there. Like, you know, take something from it and bring it into the real world because, you know, we're in the real world. You know, I think that makes sense. But, you know, with that said, I have many wonderful friends who I admire, particularly their intellect. And I think concept is something that they, I'm sure they struggle with it, but they it's much more natural for them and that's paramount in their mind with their music. And the sounds that they create are things I would never think of sometimes. I have some original sounds that I make too, but for them, I think they think much more outside the box than I do sometimes. And I cherish that and their sort of limitless creativity that they have. So I'm not... you know, I don't mean to say all this stuff and provide a different kind of prejudice in the sense that, oh, if you're not listening to pop music, you're not, you know, living in the real world. If you're embrace your geek, embrace your nerd. If pop music doesn't inspire you now, or maybe it will, you know, I'm not trying to say that anyone should think differently as well, you know.
So talking about the struggle and how many skills you have to possess and how much you've learnt all the way from, you know, UQ through afters through NYU,
mm-hmm.
now moving across to LA, mm-hmm. working in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
For those young emerging or mature emerging composers back home who mm-hmm. are kind of looking to LA and thinking, man, that looks glorious. I'd love to get into the film and commercial industry. What do you tell them?
Do it. Well, that's the other thing. I mean, I'd also say the industry at home is great too. There's nothing... It's smaller, certainly, but it's still lots going on. There's more people doing film music these days and they're getting younger and younger. That's the thing. It's what I was sort of explaining before. Because it's so much more attainable because you can compose a whole feature film on a laptop. You really can. So... And maybe a few extra gadgets, sure, and the right software, but, you know. You know, it's there's great movies being made. You look at someone like Nigel Westlake, and I kind of looked to Nigel Westlake for me as not only a brilliant composer, I love his music, by the way, but I look to him in many ways as someone who I, you know, I suppose emulate in a way because he's clearly a concert music composer and a film music composer and brilliantly straddles them, you know, and has a voice as well. We talked about that earlier as well, you know. You know, you hear a few bars of him and it's him, you know, and you hear his film music and it's still him, but it's like telling a story. And you hear his Requiem, for example, which I sang in that in Sydney. And, you know, he's someone I greatly admire for that reason too. So I'm glad that I've done it my way and it's kind of, it feels like concert music also came naturally for me too as well. Whereas for others, like, concert music is a different beast for them and they kind of need the film and they might be, you know, people in a pop background and they kind of be more producers, engineers and stuff like that. They're good at writing really contemporary scores. I'm making big generalizations here, obviously. But, you know, just go for it. I mean, if that's... And do it in Australia. Go to Sydney. Go to Afters. I think they do it in Melbourne now too. Find out the Australian scene. And then if that takes off for you, then do that. And then if that doesn't work out, or if you want to move abroad, or if you, you know, feel like you're a big fish in a small pond, which is possible, you know, good for you, you know, bloody hell. Then, you know, move across to America, because there's a lot going on here. But even it's even just worth the experience moving to America, I think, because you get to see where the richest tradition of film music was made, and you learn a lot from seeing how the big movies are made. And I've learned a lot from being a very small part of that.
Well, it's a very great insight into how diverse your work is, like just what you have to do.
Lots of stuff.
But the fun in that, I really get that. I think to wrap up, I'd love to just ask you a little bit of a question. You might need to ponder it for a second.
Sure.
But you're at a concert or your film has just been premiered 5 years from now. It's just happened and you're reading a review of your music.
Uh-huh.
What would you like that review to say?
Oh, dear.
It doesn't have to be sentences, but by what words or characteristics or sounds would you like that review of Joe Twist in 5 years to read?
Hmm. Would you like it to be more about concert music or film music?
Your choice.
Yeah, my choice. Okay.
Interesting if they're different.
Yeah. I mean, they're the same, and they are different beasts in a way. I mean, overall, I'm flattered by, you know, when I've got the odd review even recently, I'm flattered by the words expressive and intelligent. I just appreciate that, you know. They're very vague, broad brushstroke kind of, you know, you could apply it to anything kind of words. But I still think that they're important, you know. I'm not... I think if I've expressed something and people have, you know, what I've expressed has made an impact on them and it sounds expressive, it means that I've communicated something and it's resonated with them. And then intelligent, I think, reflects not only just, you know, good music, well-written, good craft, but just like something that goes beyond that a little bit musically as well. It's that... not exactly sure what it is, you know, it's a visceral idea, I suppose, but just something that reflects something almost maybe a little bit spiritual even. I'm not really religious or too spiritual. I've written a lot of sacred music, as you know, a lot of vocal music, you know, sing my ass off, you know. That's my other part-time job here, by the way, if you're wondering how I eat.
We need another, you know, 2 hours exactly, to go into this.
Yeah. With film, though, what I'm going to try and get at is the idea that sometimes the best film score is one you don't notice. And all film scores should play that role in the sense that, like, they're not redundant, but they might still have a shit ton of notes in them, a lot of crazy orchestration or whatever, and be really out there or just really expressive and tuneful or whatever. But I'd love a review that acknowledges my music, not only that they heard it, but also that maybe it was expressive and intelligent too. But just that it really told the story. It was a player in the team, that it really was like brilliant score and deftly contributed to the storytelling, you know, played its role, you know, supporting role, for example. You know, acknowledge that it just wasn't this score that just, you know, stuck out and got in everyone's way, and you know that I think is
that
is,
it was essential.
Yeah, is that it's not just the technicalities of it. That really is what you choose and the colors that you use and the, you know, the characterization that you create through music is really important. So yeah, that's what I'd be looking for. I'd feel chuffed by that if I got that kind of review. It'd be nice.
That sounds like an amazing review, and I look forward to reading that review.
Oh, thanks.
Within the next 5 years or more.
Oh, cheers.
I'd like to thank you very much for chatting with me, and
it's a pleasure.
To all our listeners, and to giving us an insight into what is a very interesting and exciting and diverse life that you're living at the moment, Joe. Yes.
Well, you know, good thing I haven't got a family. Good thing I'm a single gay man, you know.
That's a whole other podcast. I can't wait to talk about it.
Sorry,
that.
I keep saying things that like lead to, we could talk about that. Yeah. But yeah, no. Thank you. And it's been a pleasure to allow my mind to ramble on for you. So I hope, and I hope that it, it's of use and inspires some people out there to, you know, keep going and have it. Because honestly, you just, I mean, I'm in the midst of my career, and it's, you know, it's a evolving thing too. It's a difficult beast, like I've been mentioning. But you just got to keep going. You really do. You just gotta, persistence pays off in the end, I reckon. And it's the journey.
Good advice.
Yeah, it's the journey.
This podcast included two works by Joseph Twist, Le Tombeau de Monk, performed by the ensemble Collusion, and Great Minds, performed by the Southern Cross Soloists and Teddy Tahu Rhodes. For more information about Joseph, visit his website at www.joetwist.com.
And Starbucks too. I need my fix. Can I sit here too? I'll search the house and find a nook to finally read that Stephen Hawking book. I'll study Zen, take up the guitar. I'll search for wisdom near and far. To the internet's death, I raise my cup. Wait, never mind, it came back up.
Making Conversation podcast is brought to you by Making Waves. Making Waves is a free online listening resource bringing listeners the latest new music from Australian composers. We'd love for you to discover, listen, like, subscribe, and share new Australian music. You can find us at makingwavesnewmusic.com. We'd like to thank all the people who made this season possible. This includes the supporters of our crowdfunding campaign, project patron Cameron Lamb of Camaclan, and Creative Partnerships Australia's match funding program. The series production team is Leah Blankendahl, Stephanie Eslake, Sasha Kelly, David John Lang, Matthew Lorenzen, Rebecca Aaron-Smith, Chris Williams, Antonia Zappia, Daniel Thorpe, Thomas Green, Lisa Cheney, and Peggy Polias, along with interns Angus Baxter, Marlena Radice, and Mark Wolfe. The podcast theme music was the work I/O by Australian composer Elia Simic Prozik. If you wish to learn more about the composer, music or interviewer featured in this episode, head to our website and click podcast to view the show notes. If you're enjoying these podcasts from Making Waves, there are a number of ways in which you can show your support. You can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes or your favourite app. You might even like to leave a review. You can also share this episode and the series with your networks. Making Waves is a voluntary endeavour. If you're interested in volunteering or interning with us, we'd love to hear from you. We also encourage you to consider making a small one-off or continuing donation to support the ongoing promotion of new Australian music and composers. Visit makingwavesnewmusic.com/support.